All right. Just to show you how much power you all have if you would just exercise it, I have moved the go live date for this episode from July 12th to July 5th based on this plaintive voice message from our listener, Spike.
What do I think about? However am I going to make it 2 more weeks until you release your next episode? Keep up the good work.
Welcome. Please accept Jim and John's invitation to join them as they once again ask each other, what do you think about... Hey, John, what do you think about magic? American magic in particular?
Well, Jimmy, I guess I'm unaware of any specifically American magic. I mean, I thought magic was magic, right?
I guess I should have worded that better. I meant magic as practiced here in the States by powwows and Appalachians or Appalachians. Then as a follow-up question, what do you think about curses and tinctures and poultices and all that?
Well, I mean, I have no belief in curses at all. But I was always under the impression that tinctures and poultices are basically just folk medicine, right? I mean, some of those seem to actually work. I think Native Americans knew enough about the curative effects of birch bark. I mean, I really don't want to think about how they found out about it, though. I mean, you have to be pretty hungry to decide to eat the bark of a tree.
Yeah, I've often wondered that, too. They are pretty much folk medicine, which turns out to be, at least under the umbrella, of magic. And I wouldn't write off curses totally. If the subject of the curse believes in the power of the cursor.
Oh, yeah. But since I don't believe, it's not counting, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Wave a chicken at me all you want. I don't care.
What do you think about clannish sects currently existing in the United States that actually employ magics and curses and folk medicine and such?
Well, I mean, I'm sure they exist. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but like the Roma and stuff running around. So, sure.
They do exist right here along with everyone else, and they possess their own rituals and customs which normal citizens living outside of their bailiwick are usually unaware of. One of these mystery-shrouded sects exists in the rolling hills and farmlands of Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Indiana. Hell, they've even stretched all the way down to Florida.
Really?
I'm talking about the Amish.
Really? Yeah. Well, I'm intrigued about where this is headed. So lay on, Macduff, and damned be he that first cry, hold, enough.
I mean, everyone's heard of the Amish.
Sure.
But I'll give a quick history of what they really are.
You know? You got to get my buddy Spike up to date because he's woefully ignorant of things.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yes.
The Amish are a denomination of the Anabaptists. They use the Bible as a guide for living. They reject infant baptism in favor of baptism of believing adults, which, I mean, other denominations
also
do that.
All that untypical or atypical, I guess.
Right. They get their name from a Jacob Ammon, an Anabaptist leader who believed in a strict moral lifestyle that was even more strict than the already
strict
Anabaptist beliefs. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But you got to remember that. I mean, this was like, I don't know, mid 1500s, right?
Oh, yeah. He, in 1693, formed his own religious sect And eventually they came to be known as the Amish from his last name, Amon.
Oh, okay.
They immigrated to America. The first ones arrived here in about the mid-1700s. And the oldest Amish settlement in the New World is in Lancaster County in Pennsylvania, which was established around 1760. And then a second wave took place in the early to mid 1800s.
Okay.
Some of their basic beliefs are they eschew secular values like individualism and pride. And this is exhibited through their plain clothing and their prohibition of photographs, things like that.
You know,
individual Bible study or devotions are frowned upon because it may lead to a personal interpretation that's not in line with the traditional doctrine. And there's no single body that sets out the specific beliefs each member is expected to adhere to. Each church district sets forth their own ideas.
And, yeah, each community does.
Right. All of their decisions are, based on a literal interpretation of the Bible and something they have called the Ordnung.
Yeah, this part is really interesting to me, though. The Anabaptists were formed in Switzerland in 1527, and their basic beliefs can be found in a document called the Schlittheim Confession. In it, they have a statement advocating for separation from evil, because there can be no fellowship with the wickedness of the world or people who believe differently than they do. They are basically forced to live apart from modern society. It doesn't stop them from doing business with non-believers, though. I mean, you ever bought an Amish quilt, Jim? Those are pricey items, brother.
Now, that ordinance that I mentioned is a set of unwritten rules that act as a guide and foundation for the Amish community, in addition to what's contained in the Bible. And this ordinance sets forth their dress code and establishes their hairstyles and their facial hair. Married men have to grow a beard, but they can't have a mustache because a mustache is vanity.
It is.
And it all goes back to Edwardian and even earlier times where men would those huge mustaches and they'd wax the ends of them. And
oh, yeah.
Primp and that's where that comes from. It regulates the type of buggy that section uses.
So they can't have those sport coupes.
It regulates which technologies are acceptable and just when they can be used. If they don't adhere to these rules, they run the risk of being banned or shunned by the community.
Yeah, they do. I think some people may have heard the term rumspringa, but they probably don't really know what it is. But one of the foundational principles of Anabaptism, and thereby the Amish, right, is adult baptism. We talked about that earlier, right?
Right.
In other words, an adult person chooses to be baptized. So after the age of 16, which is when they pretty much stop school, and before getting married, Amish youth really aren't Amish.
Right, you're right.
They haven't chosen to be baptized yet, and they're given a period of time called rumspringa to allow them some time to either reject the ways they've grown up with or join the community and be baptized. So this allows them to explore the world without the risk of being banned or social shunning. And I think it's a great idea, honestly.
Yeah, it gives them a chance to experience what they're going to give up.
Yeah, I mean, people think it's what they're going to get, like they're going to get TV or internet or whatever, but really it's what they're giving up.
There are like four main groups to the Amish. There's the Old Order Amish, which are the most conservative, hardcore Amish, dressing like dark colors, primarily black and all that. I mean, they're the hardliners.
They're your fundamentalist version of the fundamentalists.
And then you have the New Order Amish. They practice worship at home. They don't believe in churches.
They don't have organized church buildings.
Right. Now, the Old Order, or the New Order, rather, they use horse and buggy transportation, and they still wear plain clothing. The New Order, they speak the Pennsylvania Dutch, and they prohibit alcohol and tobacco and internet, television, and radio, and all that stuff. But some of them do allow electricity and permit the use of telephones. Weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then you have the beachy Amish, which...
What's a beachy Amish?
Yeah, well, they're starting to get a little more loosey-goosey. They have meeting houses to go to for their churches. They do missionary work. They're less likely to excommunicate members. They'll own cars, but they still tend to forbid television and radio. So some modern technology is okay, some isn't.
That's Amish light.
Yeah. And then the last are the Mennonites. They own automobiles, use tractors, have churches.
Well, yeah, they're not silly, right?
I guess you'd say they have the same basic core religious beliefs, but they realize that they're living in a modern world.
It makes sense to me that you can still be a Mennonite Amish, right? Because you don't have to embrace the world in order to get from point A to point B. You know, who you run around with and how you talk to them and stuff like this is all part of community. But using a tractor instead of four horses seriously?
I don't know. It kind of chafed me that they won't own cars, but they'll sure as fuck ride in them. You know?
Absolutely.
And they hire people to ferry them around in vans.
Yes. Yes, I've seen it thousands of times.
There's a little hypocrisy there, in my opinion. And in case anyone's wondering, Mennonites get their name from this Anabaptist leader whose name was Menno Simmons. He was originally a Catholic priest, but he converted to the Anabaptist faith in the 1530s. And the word Mennonite comes from his first name.
That's cool.
What really interests me about the Amish is within their community, there are these guys called Brauchari or powwows.
So now when we say we're going to powwow, I always thought that was just talking.
An Amish powwow is kind of like a medicine man / folk bush magician kind of guy.
Okay, so it's a same word, different meaning.
Yeah, they are practitioners of the Amish flavor of folk magic.
Okay.
In their opinion, it's really not magic per se, but rather prayers and a channeling of God's divine energy. The Brauchari has a polar opposite in the Hexari.
Hexari, I think I recognize Hex, right?
Right, exactly. And that's a practitioner of black magic. Hexari is German for witchcraft, actually. And a Hexe is a witch.
Yeah, we always hear about witches casting hexes.
Right. And while the Brauchari gets his power from God or the Holy Trinity, the devil supplies the power to a Hexari.
Okay. That makes sense.
This brand of folk magic has its roots back in Germanic Europe and was called Brauche, which is the German word for need, to need something.
Like N-E-E-D?
N-E-E-D. Yeah. Not need as in needing bread, but to require something.
Oh, okay.
When medical treatment isn't available or the doctor can't heal a specific ailment, a Brauche was called into play. Their remedies were preserved orally, passed from one generation to the next until the early 1800s. And then in 1820, a book called The Long Lost Friend was compiled and published in Reading, Pennsylvania. This grimoire, which was originally composed in German, listed in one handy source the arcane spells of the powwows.
I knew none of this. None of it. This is all news to me. So I guess I grew up too far from an Amish community.
You did, brother. The Long Lost Friend, I went and bought a copy.
Oh, cool.
And it's not a book of spells of the Aya Newt and Wing of Bat variety. I'll give some examples of the spells here. These were all taken from Daniel Harm's completed annotated edition. So if you want to go look for it yourself, that's what you can look for. Right out the gate, it starts with two spells to cure hysterics, or what they call mother fits.
Oh, these are lady problems, right?
And the spell goes like this. Put that joint of the thumb, which sits in the palm of the hand, on the bare skin, covering the small bone, which stands above the pit of the heart, and speak the following at the same time. Matrix, Patrix, lie thyself right and safe, or thou or I shall on the third day fill the grave.
Does this basically say put your hand over your solar plexus and then say this verse? You know, which hand?
I don't know that it mattered which hand, but it's more like the joint of the thumb has to go there. And then the second spell for these mother fits goes like this. This must be strictly attended to every evening. That is, whenever you pull off your shoes or stockings, run your finger in between all of the toes and smell it. This will certainly affect a cure.
It would certainly cure my upset stomach because I'd immediately purge the entire contents of my stomach if I sniffed my toe jam laden fingers. Although sometimes it really is best to just go ahead and throw up instead of fighting to keep it down. You know, maybe I'll try this next time.
Next time you have lady problems?
Yeah. Well, next time I have an upset stomach.
Now, a certain remedy to stop bleeding is provided.
Now, is this, what kind of bleeding are we talking about? Are we back on female problems or?
This is cutting yourself bleeding. We're off the lady problems.
Okay.
And this one is guaranteed that it will work regardless of the distance between the witcher and the afflicted. You have to say, Jesus Christ, dearest blood, that stoppeth the pain and stoppeth the blood, in this help you, insert the name of the afflicted person here, God the Father, God the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Amen.
Yeah, we'll try that. Next time you get shot, I'm doing that.
And, you know, if you or your livestock or your family members are afflicted with worms, you can try this. Recite the following three times. Mary, God's mother, traversed the land, holding three worms close in her hand. One was white, the other was black, the third was red. And then, while speaking the charm, stroke the sufferer with your hand. And at the end of each recitation, strike the back of the sufferer in a flowing manner. Once after the first recitation, twice after the second, and thrice after the third. Then set the worms a certain time. I guess they mean a time when they should depart the body. That's not less than 3 minutes after you've finished the chant.
Uh-huh. Dude, I think if you're bleeding or, I don't know, you have worms, you need to go to a doctor.
If you want your dog to impress upon you and love you more than anyone else,
uh-huh,
as long as you haven't tried any other spells on him, you can do this. Draw some of your blood, let the dog eat your blood with its food, and he will stay with you. Or you can try this. While you're eating at the table, scrape the four corners of the table with your knife. Continue to eat using the same knife after the scraping, and then let the dog eat those scrapings.
I don't get this. Does the dog eat the wood that I scraped off the table?
I guess the wood and the varnish and the whatever the fuck's
there. I don't get it, but I do guarantee that you'll teach your dog to beg at the table if you do this.
This is something you can try tonight on the wife.
Okay.
To make a sleeper answer questions. Lay the heart and right foot of a barn owl on the sleeper.
Oh, I have that laying around. Just sure.
And he will answer any questions you ask and tell you what he has done. As a bonus, the following is added to this charm. Put the two even halves under the armpits and no dog will bark at you. Presumably, you is the sleeper, I guess, because you're getting the stuff under your armpits.
Even halves of what? The heart, the right foot? I mean, this is whack.
It must be the hearts. Yeah, it's so vague.
I'm going to have to go out to Kroger and see if they're selling hearts and right foots of a barn owl or something.
Now, the Pennsylvania Dutch must not have liked to have dogs bark at him, because the next bell is another aid in the prevention of dog barking. Whoever wears a dog heart on his left side, no dog will bark at him. They are dumb before him.
You know, this works on people too.
Yeah.
You go around wearing a dog's heart anywhere on your person, and I'm going to avoid speaking to you.
Right. I'll even cross the other side of the street.
Man, I'm telling you what.
A general charm for safety is this. Carry the right eye of a wolf fastened inside your right sleeve to remain free from all injuries.
This clearly means the NFL should start blinding wolves immediately.
Or they could try this protective charm. Write down the following so nothing can hit you. Anania, Azaria, Misael, blessed be the Lord, for he has redeemed us from hell and has saved us from death. And he has redeemed us out of the fiery furnace and has preserved us even in the midst of the fire. In the same manner, may it please him, the Lord, that there be no fire. On a piece of paper, then you write down in capital I. The next line you write all in caps, N-I-R. And then the third line is also a capital I. And these represent Jesus Nazarenus Rex Judaeorum. And in case you're wondering who Ananias, Azariah, and Misael are, they are also known as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Yeah, the guys who were thrown into the fiery furnace by King Nebuchadnezzar. This tome is full of this kind of charms, and I don't have time to read them all here. So I'm going to end with one last one, which is called A Charm for Bad People. It is said, if you suspect a person for badness and he sits down in a chair and you take a shoemaker's wax end that has not yet been used and stick one end of it on the underside of the chair and you sit on the other end of it, he will immediately make water and in a short time die.
I know what a shoemaker's wax end is, but my buddy Spike doesn't. Can you educate him?
Sure. A shoemaker's wax end is a thread covered in wax with a bristle at the end, and it's used to sew leather together.
You know, another thing, badness. You know, badness seems kind of vague to me.
I don't know. But I do think it would be hilarious to make someone piss themselves just because you think they're a bad person.
That's it. Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. In addition to the long-lost friend, sometimes spells are borrowed from the 6th and 7th books of Moses. And these are magical grimoires that supposedly were penned by the Moses of the Pentateuch. They're supposed to contain some of the magics worked by Moses against the Egyptians.
Now, wait a minute. Slow down here a second. Moses wrote down magic spells.
Hell yeah. After he wrote the first 5 books of the Bible, do you think he quit writing? He had the bug.
I had to check this out. And yep, the 6th and 7th and perhaps 8th too are attributed to Moses. And they come from Talmudic and Kabbalic sources. Who knew?
I did.
Yeah, you did. I didn't. I'd never heard of this thing.
And just a quick thing about for all the touristy people who go through Amish country and look at the hex signs that are painted on barns. Those hex signs are not Amish and they're not Mennonite. The Lutherans brought them over to Pennsylvania.
Oh, what are these hex signs you're talking about? I've just seen those quilt looking patterns. What are you talking about?
Sometimes on barns, you'll see designs painted. One of them that I can think of offhand is like a Dusselfink, it's called. It's a two-headed bird.
Oh, that's a hex sign?
Yeah. You know, and everyone equates them with Amish, but they're not. They're Lutheran.
I didn't know that.
Now, before we continue, sit back while we bewitch you with the scoop on Anchor Podcasting. And we're back. Another school of rural American magic is found in the Appalachian Mountain region. The earliest roots of granny magic appear to be a melding of Britain's pre-Christian religions with the traditions of the Christian church. In the 1700s and 1800s, large numbers of Scots-Irish people migrated to the United States and settled in the Appalachian Mountains, or Appalachian, whichever you prefer. I bounce between the two. They brought with them their folk healing beliefs, which were then further modified by interaction with the Native Americans. Unfortunately, this is an oral history, so we don't have a nice, nifty book like The Lost Friend to reference. Derived from a blend of Scots-Irish heritage and flavored by the individual beliefs of each isolated Appalachian community, this magic has four types of practitioners: granny doctors, groomer doctors, seers, and water witches. These individuals did not have special inherent magic. They act as tools through whom God exercises his power or healing or whatever. Granny doctors healed patients by using herbs, flowers, roots, weeds, you know, all that stuff.
Sure.
They'd create salves and tinctures and poultices, like you mentioned earlier. These are healing things.
Yep.
They're also known as yarb doctors, which is a corruption of herb doctor. And sometimes they're called root doctors.
Yes. I've heard them called root doctors before. Also yarb doctors.
Oh, you've heard yarb?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, the male practitioners were called doctor or doc. The females were called granny. And women dominated the field. So go women.
Yay, women.
I have a little personal experience with this. My dad used gypsum and some other ingredients, maybe one of which was carbolic acid, I seem to recall. And he mixed all this shit up to create a salve to heal open wounds in livestock, horses in particular, because we had horses.
Yeah, well, carbolic acid is a known disinfectant.
He was given the recipe by some old timer in the Stone Creek Valley up in Tuscarawas County.
I think, if I remember right, carbolic acid is what they used on my mom to burn out her big toe toenail so it didn't grow back.
Huh.
No kidding.
A doctor doctor?
Or no, yeah, real, doctor. A real doctor. No. Yeah. Yeah, not a yarb doctor, a podiatrist.
Groomer doctors use charms and amulets and spells and incantations or biblical verses, as well as physical touch or breathing on patients to, you know, enact their healing.
Uh-huh. That one sounded suspicious as hell to me.
That's the one I want to be.
Yep.
They're also known as conjure doctors or power doctors. Groomer is an old word that meant to bewitch. So there's that.
Yeah.
They worked in protective or preventative magics. If the magic they gave you failed, well, they could also lift curses to save you.
Okay.
The skills are passed on via familial instruction, and it had to be passed to a family member of the opposite sex. So mother to son, son to daughter, down through the line.
Yeah.
And be damned if I don't have personal acquaintance with this, too. My own father would witch warts away from people.
Really?
Yes.
Did it work?
People swore by it.
Cool.
And he passed the spell on to my sister before he died.
Is Deb doing it to anybody?
I don't know that she's ever tried it, because
we ought to ask.
Another personal acquaintance, but a little, I guess, one step beyond, was a woman in the church that I grew up in back in Tuscarawas County that my dad said could stop blood with a Bible verse. I've read about other, you know, this supposedly being a power. They use the verse Ezekiel 16:6, which is supposed to stop the flow of blood. And then seers, just like the name implies, would read portents in nature or tea leaves. They would perform haruspicy, which is the reading of animal entrails.
Ew.
And oniromancy,
Okay, Mr. Vocabulary. Once again, my buddy Spike doesn't understand your fancy words. What is onieromancy?
You know what? I fucking forgot.
It's dreams.
Oh, it's dreams. Yeah. It's interpreting dreams for people. They could also see the significance in a falling broom or the itching of a body part. And my mom always said, if your ears burned, someone was talking about you. And if your nose itched, you could expect company.
Well, my sainted grandmother told me that if your palm itched, you're coming into some money.
Yeah, I've heard that one too. And these seers could scry in water, dirt, or ashes, or flames. So
Spike wants to know what scrying is.
God damn, get that Spike a dictionary. It's looking in into the water or the flames for visions, you know.
Yep.
And then water witches. Everyone's probably heard of water witches.
Yeah, I think they call them dowsers more commonly.
Spike know what that is?
Yeah, he knows what a dowser is.
You know, and these terms probably call to mind an old guy walking around with a forked stick and, you know.
The way I've always seen it, it's two sticks.
Well, I remember as a kid, like in cartoons, it was a Y-shaped
stick. Yeah, we used to do that. Walk around with a Y-shaped stick with the Y part in your hands and the base of it sticking out in front of you. And it was supposed to go up and down and
Came
to water.
The actual shape of the stick, though, I don't know that it really matters because some of them are just straight old sticks that up and down. And some of the guys use pendulums, you know, fashioned from fishing string sinkers or stones or whatever tied to the end of a string.
Cool.
And I hate to say it. Once again, I have personal experience because my dad taught me how to douse for water.
Did he really?
Yes, he did.
Have you tried it?
I have. Yeah. He showed me you could make dowsing rods from wire coat hangers.
Okay.
You have to untwist the hook and straighten them out. And you need two of them, or straighten one out and cut it in half. And you bend it into an L shape. And then you balance the crook of the L on the side of your palm, resting it in the space between your thumb and the first joint of your index finger.
Okay.
And then you slowly walk around the designated area and mark the ground wherever the two wires cross.
Okay.
Let me say that my father was not a knock on wood, salt over the shoulder, don't walk under ladders kind of guy, but he did swear by this. And people came to him for help in, you know, finding shit.
Oh, no kidding.
Examples of granny magic as provided in the book Crossroad of Conjure by Katrina Rosbold include protection. Some of these are you hang basil around the windows and doors to keep haints away.
What's a haint? Spike wants to know.
A haint's a ghost.
Oh, like a haunt. Got it.
Or you can plant rosemary around your house as protection from two-legged, four-legged, and six-legged critters.
Do you think this works on deer? Because I would love to keep those scavengers out of my garden.
Give it a whirl.
I think I will. I don't have any rosemary planted right now, but I've got basil, I've got mint, I've got all kinds of things, but not rosemary.
Basil and mint have stronger magical qualities when they're cut, but rosemary is strongest while it's still in the ground. So remember that.
Okay.
You can carry mistletoe in your pocket to ward off lightning strikes.
Well, you know, I do this and it really works. I haven't been struck by lightning yet.
You can carry a branch from a tree that's been struck by lightning for protection from lightning.
Well, I think you can carry a branch from a tree and just be protected, period.
Well, yeah. You speak softly and carry a big one.
Or, you know, you could pin a wolf's eye to your clothes and I'm out. Yeah, that'll protect you too. Yeah.
If you want to protect your house, get a blue glass jar, get some hair from each person living in the home. Type of hair not specified.
I was going to say, because I'm a little thin on top, so.
Well, then you might have to go south.
Yeah, okay.
Ashes from the home hearth, dirt from the area next to the back door and the front door, and you put it all in the bottle, and you put the bottle on the porch or in a tree in the front yard.
Okay.
You'll be protected from bad things.
I guess so.
Another home protection, place glass bottles of various colors in a tree in your yard by shoving branches into the mouths of them.
Yeah. You know, I've seen this. I really have. I didn't know what that was, but I just thought the people were crazy.
Well, now you know.
I do.
To remove a curse, you can sleep a full night on a freshly dug grave. It works best if it's a close relative.
But yeah, no, I'm not.
If you can't find a close relative who died recently,
you can make one.
You can, well, yeah, you can aid in the process. You can hammer a nail into a baby's crib post to ward off curses. And I would assume the nail goes back to iron
being
protection against the fae and all that.
That's right. Yeah, that's true. They were. It was.
You can touch the side of your nose to repel the evil eye.
Okay, now I have personal experience with this. My grandmother from Hungary, she absolutely believed in curses and the evil eye and touching the side of your nose to repel it.
Did she really?
She really did. And the evil eye was some strange gesture that this lady across the street did. Okay. They didn't get along. My grandma and this lady across the street. So
isn't this it?
Let me look. Hang on.
Can you see me?
Yeah.
It's like,
you pitch it like
heavy
this.
Metal devil horn sign, right?
But you pitch it. And so that lady, she saw my grandma would do that and my grandma would ward it off.
Oh my God. That's funny. So they would like have magical battles across
the street. It was strange as hell. I thought that was the weirdest thing when I was in college, and I'm like, grandma, this doesn't anything. It's real. It's real. No, it's not. It's really not.
Hey, maybe she was protecting everybody from that woman.
Well, maybe she
and
was.
You just didn't know.
And I just, yeah. Exactly.
You can also recite the 94th Psalm three times to ward off evil sent to your way by another person, but touching your nose is a lot easier.
How big is Psalm 94? Oh, it's long. Three times?
You got to do it three times? I'm just touching the nose of my head.
That's it. That's
or pounding a nail into my baby's head.
Or
a crib.
Yeah, you pound it in their head.
Yeah. Ways to get good health or to restore health are also outlined in this book. You can carry a bloodstone to prevent pregnancy loss. You can carry a medicine bag while pregnant containing a bloodstone, which will prevent miscarriage. Have some jasper in there to prevent bleeding during pregnancy and childbirth. And get a lock of hair from both the mother and father to ensure the health of the baby and to bring general protection to it. To prevent crib death in a baby, have the child taste the ashes from the hearth.
Yeah, that's going to go over well.
Yeah.
Don't tell anybody, okay? If you're going to do this, don't tell anybody.
Yeah. Hard to explain it to
social workers.
Social workers, yeah. To prevent a cold, slice an onion and tie it to the bare bottoms of your feet with a clean linen before going to bed.
Oh, sure.
Also prevents sex.
It prevents a lot of things, I was going to say. It also prevents other things, but okay, yeah, sure.
To cure a wart, draw a drop of blood from the wart, put it on a corn kernel, and feed that piece of corn to a black hen.
Okay.
And to cure a headache, bury your hair clippings under a stone in a cemetery.
This is clearly before people knew about DNA, because they're going to come looking for you nowadays.
If you want to have a good marriage and home life, you twist an apple stem while reciting the alphabet. The letter at which the stem breaks will be the first letter of your future spouse's name. Throw a cotton pouch filled with basil and rosemary into the hearth fire to bring happiness to the home.
It would make my wife happy because she likes the way basil and rosemary smell. So,
place a sprig of rosemary under your mattress to keep your husband from straying. Burn the sprig the next day and replace it with a new one. Do this for 9 days. To stop your wife from straying, do the same thing, but use mugwort instead. If you want to have good luck, nail a thrown horseshoe over your front door with the prongs pointed up so the luck doesn't run out.
I'm doing that wrong because I've always just used a horseshoe, right? Without ensuring that it was thrown. Does it count if I throw it in a game of horseshoes?
I think it's supposed to be thrown by the horse itself as it's clomping along.
Clearly, I'm just using any old horseshoe. So maybe it was thrown.
And you might be doing rabbit's feet wrong, too. For luck, you carry the left hind foot of a rabbit killed in a graveyard on top of a grave on Friday. If it's raining on Friday, do it on Saturday, rain or shine. Oh, and do this within one day of the new moon.
So not just any old rabbit's foot. You got to carry through with some stuff here.
Right.
Yeah, you got good luck not getting arrested when you drag a rabbit into a graveyard and kill it.
Yeah. Yeah. If you find a pin on the ground, pick it up and stick it in your collar or your lapel for luck.
Okay.
Never heard, I've heard a penny.
Yeah,
pennies. A pin.
Yep.
Yeah. If you're into divination, omens, and portents, you mentioned this one earlier. If your left hand itches, you'll lose money. Your right hand, you'll get money.
Cool.
Now, I always heard the general, if your palm itches, you're going to get money.
That's what I always heard too.
Specify, yeah. If a blackbird sits on the roof, someone will die within 2 weeks.
My sainted grandmother used to get really, really upset if a blackbird landed on someone's roof.
Really?
Really and truly. She believed it.
Well, blackbirds are not good because if one sits on the windowsill, it's a sign of bad luck.
Hmm.
If a broom falls over, company is on the way. Now, my mom always said, if your nose itches, as I mentioned earlier, you'll get company.
Right.
If smoke moves straight up a chimney, the weather will clear soon if it is currently rainy or foggy or snowy. If the smoke stays close to the roof, it will rain or snow by the next night unless birds are flying around it.
Okay.
And if the smoke goes back to the chimney, the weather will change from what it is currently.
Well, the smoke bit kind of makes some sense, right? I mean, we know high and low air pressures are accompanied by changes in the weather. So maybe you can just see these things if you pay attention to the smoke.
Could be. Just as proof that these things are practiced in modern America, there were a couple of instances where witchcraft was on trial in the 20th century. There was the case of Blymire and Rhymire from Pennsylvania. The Evening Sun newspaper out of Hanover, Pennsylvania, that was dated November 30th, 1928, told this story. This John Blymire, who was a 32-year-old York County, Pennsylvania citizen, heard that one of his co-workers with his family was having a hard time. So he convinced the co-worker, who happened to be named Wilbert Hess, that the hardships experienced on his father's farm were the result of bad juju from a powwow. Blymire, who moonlighted as a powwow himself.
That's how he knew that it was the result of bad juju.
He offered to lift the spell for $40 with a $10 advance.
Now in 1928, that's a tidy sum.
After Blymire told Hess the curse was broken, Hess explained later that it wasn't because troubles were still happening on the farm.
Okay.
So they decided that this curse was the work of this local powwow named Nelson Raymire or Rhymire. To break the curse fully, they would need to obtain a lock of Raymire's hair and bury it 8 feet deep behind the chicken coop.
This sounds like they're making shit up.
So Blymire, Hess, and a 14-year-old friend named John Curry broke into Rhymire's house and ended up killing him in the struggle to get a lock of his hair. They tied a rope around his neck while his arms were pinned behind him and his legs were crossed and his feet were tied together with another rope and the legs were bent up towards his back. So,
wait a minute now. So
they're like hog tying this guy. And it's like, is anyone surprised that he died during all
right.
this?
Right. That's exactly right.
Yeah. And after they realized that they had become murderers, they tried to burn the house down to hide the crime. But unfortunately for the trio, the house did not burn down. And the crime scene was discovered the next day by a neighbor. An alternate story behind this goes as follows. John Blymire was convinced by a local hexa named Nellie Knoll, which it remembers a black magic witch.
Oh, Nellie Knoll. This is a strange thing. That is my great grandmother's name.
Really?
Uh-huh.
But she didn't live in Pennsylvania.
I don't know where she lived. She later moved and was my great grandpa's wife, but I don't know where she was born.
Interesting. This Nelly convinced Blindmeyer he'd been cursed by this powwow named Nelson Raymeyer. So again, they had to go to the house and break in. But in this instance, they had to steal his long lost friend, you know, his edition of that book, and bring it back to Nelly. While they were unable to locate the spell book, Blindmeyer and his accomplices did find Raymeyer. They killed and mutilated the guy in the belief that his death would remove the curse. And then again, they set the house on fire, but that didn't work. And this led many people to believe that Raymeyer actually did have magical powers, even in death. And that's what stopped the fire and allowed his murderers to be brought to justice. So, and Raymeyer's house still stands on Raymeyer's Hollow Road. And local rumor contends, of course, that it's haunted.
Well, of course, it's got to be haunted. There was a murder there.
Yeah. And Raymeyer's Hollow is also known as Hex Hollow, and it's located in York County in central Pennsylvania near the Maryland border for all you legend trippers.
No kidding.
And then in 1934, this guy named Albert Shinsky was hexed by a powwow, and his story goes like this. A woman named Susanna Mummy had a premonition of her spouse's death. When it came true, locals dubbed her the Witch of Ringtown Valley. One day, this 17-year-old Albert Shinsky saw Susanna staring at him. After that fateful day, according to Shinsky at least, his life changed and not for the better.
That's the evil eye.
Yeah.
She gave him the evil eye.
He became depressed and lethargic, and this all led to an obsessive belief that Mummy had hexed him. He also claimed the following. He felt invisible hands pressing on his shoulders. These hands belonged to a spirit called from the sky by Mummy, or so he believed.
Mm-hmm.
He told people that a huge black cat with green eyes that came into his room as he slept grew so big at times that it filled the room and almost suffocated him.
Well, I'm glad that thing's not around me.
Yeah. He talked to doctors and clergy about this, but no one provided a solution or a cure. So he took matters into his own hands. On March 17th, 1934, he loaded a shotgun with a magic bullet provided by a local powwow and fired through the window of Mummy's farmhouse. Either by luck or misfortune, the shot was fatal to the Witch of Ringtown Valley. When interrogated by the police, Shinsky readily admitted that he fired the shot and that he believed her death was the only thing that could free him from her curse. When threatened with a death sentence, Shinsky supposedly replied, "I had to kill her. The electric chair will be better than the suffering." Doctors were appointed to examine the youth's mental health, and they returned with a diagnosis of dementia praecox.
Nowadays, we call it schizophrenia, though.
Well, Shinsky was declared unfit to stand trial and sent off to Fairview State Hospital for the criminally insane, and he stayed there until 75. In 75, he was found mentally fit and underwent a new trial. And his story was now that I was just an ignorant youth at the time that I shot the poor woman. He was judged to have made amends for his crime and was released. And Shinsky died in his Ringtown, Pennsylvania home in 1983.
Yeah. Young people can make decisions that ruin their whole lives.
Yeah. So what do you think of that, John?
It was one of those things, Jimmy, that I honestly didn't know where you were going with American magic, right? But in retrospect, yeah, I grew up around some of this stuff because both of my grandmothers believed in this kind of thing.
Yeah, well, and like I said, my mom and my dad, both mom believed in some of the little things, and dad was a practitioner of some of the arts. So
yeah.
It's a crazy world we live in. What Do You Think About is co-written by John Gordos and Jim Dumerman. Our theme music, In Suspense, is provided by podsummit.com. Thanks to all you listeners. Please take the time to rate our podcast on your favorite listening platform if you haven't done so already. Go ahead and drop us a line at wdouta@gmail.com or visit our Facebook page, anchor.fm/WDOUTA and leave us a message and look for updates on releases. Copyright 2022 by John Gordos and Jim Newman. They eschew secular values like God damn it.
The sixth and seventh, and maybe the eighth too, are attributed to Moses and are attributed to Talmudic and Kabbalistic sources. Kabbalistic. Good God.